From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and this is Idaho Matters. New Indigenous stories are hitting TV screens, like the latest season of FX's Reservation Dogs and Dark Winds on AMC. That sort of Native storytelling is rare on television and in the movies. The 2021 Hollywood Diversity Report says less than 1% of top film roles were Native in 2020. However, some organizations are investing in Indigenous representation in the media. Emma Gibson of the Mountain West News Bureau looks at the push to further Native storytelling.
We all know stories that impact us are authentic ones, reminding us of our own lives. But there's a gap in mainstream media when it comes to the stories of Native people. But one story that made it recently is Reservation Dogs. It's a comedy about four Indigenous kids coming of age on their reservation after the death of a friend. In season one, they go to an uncle's house for tips on how to fight some bullies, but he doesn't want to help at first and boasts of his life off the grid.
I only go to town to borrow some flour from my cousin Frank. I live off the land mainly.
Looks like you go to Sonic's a lot.
Why are you here?
That sort of all-Native scene is rare on TV and in the movies. The 2021 Hollywood Diversity Report says less than 1% of top film roles were Native in 2020. Native writers were also scarce. Ariane Eason teaches psychology at the University of California, Berkeley. She says Indigenous people need to be represented for non-Natives to understand issues like the missing and murdered Indigenous peoples crisis.
And it fuels this sense of apathy towards the situation. And so we can see if people can't see Indigenous peoples, then they can't see their experiences and therefore don't want to fight for them.
It also impacts how Indigenous people see themselves and could increase the risk of suicidal thoughts, depression, and anxiety.
When there's little to no representation, or when that representation is negative, then what we're left with is these ideas that maybe our future isn't as bright as it could be.
So Eason calls for more accurate and positive representations. Some tribes like the Cherokee Nation and Pueblo of Tizuki in New Mexico have created their own film studios or training programs. Groups like the Sundance Institute also support Indigenous-created stories. One new initiative comes from Netflix and an Indigenous social justice group called Illuminative. This year, they launched a producer training program to increase Native representation of behind-the-scenes jobs in TV and film.
For so long, right, companies have said there's no audience for this, right? Nobody wants to hear these stories. Nobody cares about these stories.
Leah Salgado is Latinx and Pasquayaki. She works for Illuminative and wants Native people included in all aspects of film and television. She says TV shows like Reservation Dogs or Peacock's Rutherford Falls do that.
Being able to see and watch, right, folks really connect with those characters and connect with those stories means that, right, like this big myth that has been going around in Hollywood for so long is actually just false.
Eight producers were selected for the training program, and they're being taught how to pitch a story and write a budget. Each trainee also gets $25,000 to produce their own story. Ashley Browning is one of them. She's from the Pueblos of Pewaukee and Santa Clara in New Mexico.
We have these false stereotypes of like the Indian princess, the stoic Indian, the Indian warrior, and that's not who we are.
She remembers watching the 1995 film Indian in a Cupboard. It's about a white boy and a toy Indigenous man who comes to life.
He is a real Iroquois man. He talks, he eats, he trusts me.
That's very interesting.
But I can't relate because it really doesn't touch anything that I see in myself or see growing up. But now seeing things like Reservation Dogs, I get it.
Throughout the program, she's producing a short film called Lover's Cycle. It's about a Diné man who reluctantly returns to his reservation after a breakup and discovers a different type of love. Other producers come from tribes like the Ogallala Lakota or Blackfeet and Cherokee Nations. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Emma Gibson.
And more than 1,000 years ago, a canyon in central Utah was home to a thriving community. For a look at what life might have been like back then, We stop by Fremont Indian State Park along Interstate 70. KUER's Christine Weller reports for the Mountain West News Bureau.
Ruins of more than 100 structures built by Fremont Indians were found here in the 1980s, during I-70's construction. They date from the 10th and 11th centuries. Archaeologists call them Fremont Indians because the site is by the Fremont River, and the Southern Paiute called them the Small People. But who they were and even what they called themselves is a mystery. Most of what's known about them is from archaeology. On Indigenous Skills Day at Fremont Indian State Park, rangers and volunteers are showing visitors what we do know about these people.
We just do all these demonstrations. I mean, these girls are my helpers.
The Fremont were originally hunters and gatherers, traveling seasonally. But 2,000 years ago, they began to build homes called pit houses. These communities had granaries, and sunshades provided a communal space. They made pottery, toys, and clay figurines. They also began to hunt with bows and arrows. Isaac Freilich is a volunteer. He is showing how arrowheads, knives, and other tools the Fremont would have used are made. It's called flint knapping.
And right now I'm flint knapping some obsidian from here in Utah using a copper percussion tool. And basically I'm just shaping it and thinning it down over time, just slowly working the piece to the shape you want.
Around this time, they also began to grow corn. Rena Pickovit is Navajo, Apache, and Paiute. She's worked at the park for 8 years as a ranger's aide. She is demonstrating how the Fremont made bread using blue corn, starting by grinding it between two rocks.
The natives, they did the ash bread. They used blue corn. That's the only flour that they have.
Once the mixture is ready, she shapes it with her hands. Next, the bread goes into the fire.
The natives used to make it on the fire, ash. And people always say, well, what, the ash? And I go, you just wipe it off. It's not going to hurt you.
Her son, Nathaniel Pickovit, is a park ranger. He is demonstrating how atlatls are thrown. The Fremont use atlatls, or spear throwers, for hunting.
This is the atlatl. It's an Aztec word. It means throwing dart. It's mainly just an extension of your arm.
Some visitors try their hand at using the atlatl to throw a spear. It's a big favorite among kids.
Good job, baby.
Isaac Freilich, taking a break from flint knapping, picks up a traditional double flute. It's very sensitive. Even moisture from his breath can affect the sound. While the Fremont lived in the area for 1,000 years, the Little Ice Age during the 13th century made life more difficult. So they started to leave.
When the Ice Age hit and they split, a good portion of them went south and became the Hopi people. And then the ones that stayed intermixed with that Numic-speaking group, that's Utol Azteca group that came up, and that's the Mayan Aztec descendant. They became the Paiute, Chiutes, and Shoshones.
Although the Fremont were absorbed into different cultures, their legacy lives on at Fremont Indian State Park. Evidence of their lives is documented here. And even though the drone of traffic from I-70 is a constant companion in the canyon, in some areas, we can hear a hint of what sounds the Fremont people may have heard so many years ago. Water, birds, and wind. Christine Weller, KUER News.